Hey guys, this is David Avalon with the Breaking the Guard podcast. Before we get started, I just wanted to remind you all to check out davidmma.com. That is my new website where I've been posting all of my technique videos, philosophy videos, articles covering all sorts of topics from diet, nutrition, fitness, news, etc. We also have new courses there. We just finished filming the Head Inside Single Leg series. And we also did some MMA takedowns. And you can check out the site by going to davidmma.com. And you can register for a free account, which gives you access to four courses for free and a bunch of the articles and videos. So go ahead and visit davidmma.com right now and start learning. Hey guys, what's going on? David Avalon here with another episode of Breaking the Guard. A few random pieces of news that I came across that sparked my interest. One was that Mike Tyson is slated now to fight Jake Paul in the summer, which I didn't think was something that would actually happen. And I'm still a little skeptical if it actually comes to fruition. But that will be interesting just because we are dealing with Mike Tyson. And they show some clips of him in training where he still looks like he's got some thunderous power. So it will answer some questions that maybe quite a few of us have, especially as we're getting older. Which one is like, how long can you potentially have that killer power late into life? For an athlete, I believe Tyson's 57. So, I mean, he is definitely up there, right? Like, I don't think there's anybody in combat sports, especially fighting on a main event pay-per-view card like that, of that age. As I recall, I think George Foreman, when he was, you know, coming back to win the world title in boxing, I think he was 45 or something like that, which was very old, mind you, for an athlete. And he was still putting people down. So from a curiosity standpoint, I do want to see that and see if he still's got it. Or if, because if he comes out there and he can barely move and he's not doing well, this is going to be a nightmare to see, because nobody wants to see somebody, especially someone like Mike, who's fought for many years and sustained damage here and there. We don't need to see him getting hurt further. Which brings me to the point which the Boxing Commission, who's, I imagine, has to be overseeing this if it's happening in the U.S., has to approve this match up. So I know when generally they're dealing with somebody who's older, usually like 35 and up, they start doing MRIs, brain scans to see if there's any potential issues with a brain injury. So I hope they're doing that same level of care and of security to make sure that we don't put somebody at risk, especially when the Boxing Commission's only goal is to protect the fighter. On one hand, I do see that as an individual, if I want to fight, whether I'm 20 or I'm 60, I should be able to choose what I want to do with myself. And I do agree with that. On the other hand, though, if we have a boxing commission and we're forcing people to abide by them, they should be applying the rules evenly to everybody. If you're going to have, in one case, prevent the guy from fighting, which I've had happen, and one of my students, essentially, career ended because they wouldn't approve him to fight anymore despite being fully functional and young. So to me, this kind of hits me more because that upset me quite a bit. And it turned out for the best for him, but it was unfair, right? But then we're going to just let somebody who's 57 years old fight 20-something? It seems like there's a duality here, right, of a double-edged sword where one guy's getting one treatment and somebody else is getting a different treatment because they are in the know, they have a celebrity status, there's a lot of money coming to that card, so they're going to look over the rules. That's unfair to me, right? If we're going to apply rules, it should apply evenly to everybody. So the boxing commission is going to prevent people from fighting because they feel there's a health hazard. And you're going to tell me that a 57-year-old doesn't have a health hazard? I don't really buy that. So that's my take on it, at least. But like I said, personally, I'd rather that the boxing commission was much weaker in what they can do as far as preventing people from fighting or whatnot. I'm in America. I believe it's a free country. You know, if someone wants to do something that's a potential risk of death, as long as you alert all parties and they're fine with it, you're free to choose how you want to live or die, in my opinion. With that said, Jake Paul's no slouch. And even though he's very easy to hate on because just the way he is, which I believe is part of the marketing style, he wants to be the heel. He wants everybody to hate him. And he's doing a very good job of that. He's not like a complete slouch. Now, someone like Mike Tyson in his prime would obviously starch him, you know, and just destroy him. It's also troubling that he's only picking people who are, I believe they said everybody he's fought is over 40, which is also very alarming. You know, he's essentially, you know, picking on old people to beat them up, you know, and it doesn't make sense. You know, he's doing something genius in a way, which he's finding people who had past success that were famous or still are famous and beating them and fighting them because he knows that it's a much easier path to victory. But you still get all the accolades of saying, oh, I beat a Mike Tyson. Oh, you know, I beat Anderson Silva, or I beat, you know, Tyron Woodley, or I beat Ben Askren. All people that when you fought, it was already way past their prime, right? So it's not a fair fight, but he still gets to get all the marketing attention from it. So in that, no, it is a genius move by him. But it's also, in my opinion, as a fighter, is a very cowardly move, right? I know I can walk in to a Naga white belt division and just absolutely destroy everybody, but when am I going to get out of that, right? And Naga, they don't pay any money, so you would just be an ultimate sandbagger by doing that. He's obviously getting a boatload of money doing it, so I'm sure there's better reasons for him to do it. But it still doesn't sit well with me. I think it's unethical. I think it's cowardly. Fight somebody who's of your skill, right? Or fight somebody at least that's still in their prime or moving up. Fighters are measured by the challenge, at least to me. You know, maybe I'm old school and I have different ideas. My wife tells me all the time. I'm founded in another reality. But for me, the worth of a fighter is on the battles that he's had. You don't really have much value if you're way above everybody else and you just get to destroy everybody. You don't really get to show your true worth because nobody ever tested you, right? Now, some athletes are just somewhat cursed in a way where they were just able to easily trounce everybody, and it's not their fault. There was no one available. There was no one at the time that could challenge them, right? And, you know, it is what it is. But that's not the case with Jake Paul. There's plenty of people who can beat him up. Or at least there's plenty of people who could give him a good fight that he's not finding. So this is part of the problem with the whole influencer economy here, where you can basically skip the line just because you have such a massive audience. Again, in some ways, I think it's great that people who produce engaging content can make your own audience without having to deal with middlemen. You don't have to go to networks or agents or anything like that. You just go straight to the people through social media. That is wonderful. It's just been hijacked by people, in my opinion, who are producing no value. There's just a lot of clickbaiting things, a lot of attention-grabbing things, a lot of negative bias to get your attention and then monetizing that. And I think that's a net negative for society. Again, my take, but that's how I see it. Besides that, we also have the ACC trials coming up. It's going to be this Friday, this Saturday and this Sunday. So I'm going to be there. I'm going to watch it live. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of good training coming up this week as people are rolling in to get ready for the trials. So I'll have a lot to report on for the next podcast, hopefully, and I'll see if I can do some segments throughout the week. I'm hoping that they start releasing some of the brackets as well, so I can look into potential matchups and see what they're looking like. But it's going to be a long day. It's here in Vegas, so again, I get to go local. But if you guys are not, you can, I believe, watching them flow grappling. So do that if you're, again, if you want to see some amazing matches, which there is going to be. There's 256-man brackets, I think, in multiple divisions, which means 8 matches to win first. And there's 2 days. I think they do like 6 matches on the first day and then 2 matches on day 2. Grueling. That's a really tough run for a tournament. But it should be a lot of fun to watch. One thing that I do want to talk about. There was a UFC on Saturday, I think so yesterday, that had a very interesting outcome. I'm sure if you watched any of it, you probably saw, which was, it was a prelim fight of a kid who was, I think, 18, that had been fighting since he was 15 years old, from Brazil, fighting another Brazilian, I believe. And they had a really good fight back and forth. I don't have the names. I saw like a little segment of it. I didn't have time to watch the whole fight. But I saw the ending, which was quite remarkable, where at one point, this one guy, the young kid, has a body lock from the back against the cage, and he's holding him there, and he starts putting his head into the guy's arm. So it's kind of weird. And then his opponent starts pointing at his arm and starts motioning like this. The ref stops the match. They call the doctor in. The doctor looks, and he waves off the fight, calls it off, DQ. Turns out that this guy bit his opponent on the arm, and that's why the guy was motioning there. And at first, people are like, oh, you know, he probably did it by accident. Maybe he's, you know, sometimes you're trying to choke somebody or whatnot, and your mouth gets stuck, and yeah, you might get a little bite mark or whatnot. And even the commentators were wondering if maybe a warning or a minus point should have been deducted. But then the fighter that got bit raises his arm up, and you see as clear as day a pretty nasty bite mark on both ends, which is interesting because normally you're wearing a mouthpiece. You're not going to get the top to really make that much of a mark. I don't know if he like moved the mouthpiece out of the way so he could chomp him. But it's just so bizarre. And that guy ended up being cut from the UFC entirely. And the guy who got bit got a bite of the night bonus. And Dana White gave him $50,000 for suffering that. It was just so bananas to me watching it, because it was such a weird thing to do. Like, I thought he was winning the fight. Again, I wasn't watching too intently, but he had a lot of good moments. He almost had his back, almost had a renege choke, and they were going back and forth, and it was an exciting fight. Just a weird call. Like, why would you do that? And especially for that position, it made no sense. They were standing body lock against the cage. It wasn't like he was in a losing position. He was the one in the better position. So it just really made no sense. And normally when people foul, it's because of desperation and they're trying to get some type of edge. But here it's like, why are you doing? You had the better position, you know? So just totally weird. I'm glad they did cut him, because that type of flagrant foul, it's a no-go, right? It's, again, I have a place in my heart for that, being a guy who's been fouled by like Pajares, and I've had other fighters that have been fouled egregiously with eye gouges, when I had one guy who mounted his opponent and the guy immediately just went for his eyes. And he got warned once, and then the second time my fighter mounted it again, he did the same thing, and then the fighter got DQ'd. But you can't let people get away with these flagrant fouls. An accidental thing is one thing, but somebody who's purposely trying to harm somebody, especially with, I mean, that bite is not the worst thing that could happen to you, but an eye gouge or a groin kick could have some serious lifelong application, you know, implications, if particularly eye gouging. Although people have died from serious groin shots, believe it or not. So it's not to be messed with. I think people who are that dishonorable to do such a thing should be out. I believe in harsh punishments, you know, in general. I think a lot of our degradation in society is because we're too lax, we're too comforting, too accommodating to people who make mistakes. The reality is that big mistakes, that particularly ones that harm other people, I feel like should be sternly punished. And you make an example of anybody who does. And yeah, there may be some people that, well, you know, they didn't realize how bad the consequences would be. But once you set that precedent, the next people who do that are either a little foolish and maybe don't shouldn't be hanging around since they can't follow simple instructions, you know, or they need that punishment to put them right. Again, my take. But along those terms, the last thing I'll talk about today, headbutts. There was a karate combat fight with Sam Alvey where he got headbutted and knocked down as a response, and the fight was ruled a no contest because it was an accidental headbutt. Of course, right now in MMA, headbutts are illegal. I'd say why? Why can't we headbutt somebody? What is the danger in it compared to a punch or an elbow? I feel it's the same, right? If we're talking about something that's super damaging, to me, the most damaging thing you can probably do to somebody is soccer kick them when they're on the ground, right? You get maximum foot extension, you know, and leg extension. They're on the ground. They're not in a good position to defend. And yeah, that would hurt quite a bit, right? Especially if they're kicking you this way, right? Laterally here, and they catch you on the chin or just even in the back of the neck because the way that your foot's going to scoop, that's definitely going to be a problem. Or, you know, the old days where people on their fours and someone socket kicks you right in the chin there, yeah, that's going to... I would love to have testing on that, right? Like now they have all these dummies and whatnot. We should really test these things that we feel are very dangerous. And let's see if that's true. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe just a standard head kick is good. Or maybe a knee to the chin generates more force and trauma than a soccer kick on a downed opponent. But I have a hard time buying the argument that headbutt is more dangerous than any of these things I've described. Now, granted, I understand headbutts are very hard. There's, obviously, you can knock people down with them. You're using one of the hardest parts of your body when you have the skull there to smash into their head. But I feel that it's a valid weapon. You know, it's one of those things that changes the dynamic of a fight quite a bit, right? Because headbutt from close range is a very strong weapon, and early UFCs made great use of them. I think Dan Severn was one of the guys who was really doing a lot of damage from close guard and just from up close with headbutts. It's not to be underestimated. It's a very good tool. And I just don't see, maybe I'm wrong, maybe someone can share with me a good reason why you shouldn't be able to do headbutts. You know, I think it's perfectly fine. I think, like I said, it's one of those things that would change the way people fight, right? I want a fight to be as close to a real life fight as possible while minimizing very large risks. We don't allow biting, eye gouging, shots to the spine, shots to the groin. Yeah, because there is long-term damage that could be associated to all these things. And in respect to the fight itself, it doesn't really change all that much, right? You're still going to pretty much fight the same way. If your only tactic is to groin shot or eye gouge somebody, you're not going to do that well in the fight, right? Like, you need more in order to be able to be successful. So I don't feel that really changes much of how people fight. Again, that's my take on it. But a headbutt, I think, is just as altering as like down kicks, which is something I'm also in favor for. And particularly for people who do a lot of clinch work, again, good headbutts would definitely change a lot of how we do clinch work on the ground. You know, you could be doing headbutts inside someone's close guard, even from side control, mount, you know, mount, not that really practical, but side mount might have some good implication, right? So
there's a lot of tools, a lot of times where that could be useful. And I just feel like we're missing out on a good weapon to add to the game, especially when a lot of times fights do happen. We do have accidental headbutts. And then in this case, I ended a fight that was really good, right? Or it could change the pace of our fight. And now we're like, oh, well, that was a foul. You know, now that's a minus point, or that, you know, we just DQ the guy, or we just no contest it, right? Why don't we just let it be a part of the sport, right? Let's just add another weapon to the game, make the fight a little more realistic, and give people another weapon that they can use to be able to beat their opponent. It's not like we're going to have everybody running into it, just spear people with a head. It's not the best weapon that we have, but it's a good one, and I think it should be allowed. So that's my take. You guys can let me know what you think. I hope you guys have a great day, and I'll see you next week after the trials.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, please share, like, comment, all that good stuff, and help us spread the word about Breaking the Guard. And of course, visit the website, davidmma.com. Join. We actually host a podcast there as well. You might be seeing this, you know, on Spotify or some other podcast platform, but we do have the video hosted on davidmma.com, which is free to access. You don't have to enroll. So if you want to get it in video format, you can take a look at davidmma.com. Besides, that's where we have all the techniques, all the courses, all the other stuff that you've come to expect from me. You can get it at davidmma.com.